gluten in the brain binds it's to an opioid receptor. So, it sounds really dramatic, but like it's the same place that like cocaine and heroin are
Right.
binding in the brain. So when we take gluten away initially for people who respond that way, there will actually be a withdrawal.
Welcome to the show where we help you make smart nutrition simple. If you want proven nutrition strategies to help you build a better body and create the energy to show up for your family without overly restrictive and unrealistic dieting, then you're in the right place. Make sure to subscribe and enjoy this episode. About 1 to 2% of our population has celiac disease, and most people don't even know they have it. Similarly, as many as 1 in 10 people are gluten sensitive, and again, most people have no idea. Today on the show, I'm joined by my close friend, Kelly Meehan. Kelly is an integrative health practitioner, a certified health coach, a wife, and busy mom of three, with a passion for helping families find and learn how to achieve optimal wellness through an integrative approach to health. Kelly brings a wealth of knowledge, not only from her multiple degrees and medical background, but also from her own and her children's experiences dealing with celiac disease. Now, in today's episode, we dive deep into the topics of celiac disease and gluten sensitivity. We talk about the atypical symptoms of gluten sensitivity that go far beyond just digestive issues, ranging from the effects on brain function, on mood, energy, and skin appearance, just to name a few. We discuss why gluten sensitivity goes undiagnosed and certainly misdiagnosed in so many people, as well as talk about Kelly's health journey, navigating a celiac diagnosis for both herself and her daughter, and how that transformed her professional career. We talk about the effects of glyphosate, which is a weed killer, on our food supply and why so many people with gluten sensitivities don't have any of these issues in Europe. And finally, Kelly shares a surprising list of foods that all contain gluten and provide simple, easy-to-implement strategies for managing diet changes at home should you need to remove gluten from your or your child's diet. Now, whether you're a parent navigating gluten challenges for your child, or someone experiencing these symptoms yourself, or you're just simply interested in learning more about celiac and gluten sensitivity, then this episode is packed with valuable information to help you become your own best nutrition detective. So, without further ado, here is my conversation with Kelly Meehan. Kelly Meehan, welcome to the Smart Nutrition Made Simple show. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. Excited to be here.
It's great to have you. We are longtime friends. Family are very close. And I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time because I think of a lot of what you do will absolutely resonate with our audience. And it's a bit of a pivot, I think, from some of the stuff that we normally talk about, but it's absolutely rooted in my history, personally, my background. And I know you have kind of a really interesting story and journey. And so I'm excited to be able to share that with our audience.
Thanks. Can't wait.
So tell us a little bit about you and what you currently do.
Sure. So I am currently an integrative health practitioner, and I work with everyone, but primarily with kiddos and families, and a lot of moms, but other parents and caregivers as well. And we're really working to build that foundation. And what I found is we can work so far with kids and whatever it looks like. It's gut health issues. It's ADD. Sometimes other neurological disorders, but we can only get so far if mom or dad are not on board. And so we've kind of transitioned into building this more of a family model and what that looks like, and really building what I call an unshakable foundation. So looking at the physical aspect, the emotional and the spiritual aspect, are we really being models for our kids? And so just really tying into that, at its core, but then as time goes on, of course, things come in layers. And so looking at blood work and really rooting into what is the issue and the cause of whatever these symptoms that are occurring, what's going on. So really digging in to those roots. We don't want to just slap medication or even supplement. Sometimes, you know, maybe we can take a supplement to get a quick fix kind of right away or feel better. But why is that happening in the first place? And I think even in the functional world, we can get lost in that. So really taking some time to dig into that and then take care of it at its core. But I find we need that foundation typically first. So that's kind of the...
Yeah. And that's what I love about you is you really have this kind of full family wellness approach to identifying the root cause, because it's so easy for us to kind of gloss over what's really at the core, especially in the world of social media. When we look at, you know, we look at calories and macros and supplements and training methodology and all of these shiny and sexy objects and stuff like that. But I think the further we get down this road, especially when someone starts to go down this journey, and you and I both have had these long, you know, this long journeys at play here, which has put us in this position to be able to really appreciate this root cause approach. But, you know, once you start going down this road, very quickly you start to realize, well, this is about well beyond just how calories are accumulating. It has to do with stress. It has to do with lifestyle. It has to do with gut health. It has to do with detoxification. It has to do with emotions, right? And so what you've been able to do is really take your personal journey and your personal history and your family's history and use that as such a pivotal learning opportunity to truly start to understand this stuff and now help other families create, as I said, kind of this full family wellness approach. So tell us a little bit about what your journey has looked like and how you got into the position now to be able to do this.
Sure. So I actually originally am a pediatric optometrist. So something kind of completely different. And within that world, I did a lot of what we call binocular vision, vision therapy. So I'm working with a lot of kids who come in for an eye exam because school's not going well. And so where's the first place you get sent is for an eye exam. And their eyes would be fine, but there would still be, there's something off. So why do we have low attention? Why are these issues showing up? And there are some visual reasons that those things happen and things that we can do within the optometric world. But my curiosity was piqued. Something more is going on here. And so it started there. And then my own daughter at about 4 started having just some odd issues. Kind of, she'd ride her bike for, you know, 20, 30 yards, something that a 4 or 5 year old should very easily be able to do, and just cry that her legs hurt. And I'd say, stop being so lazy. You know, this is, you know, her stomach would hurt. She started getting headaches. And the complaints started just real basic toddler type things. And they just, where they were consistent and they started to grow. And we started to have these kind of, non-regulated tantrums. So we could not get her to regulate. And you know, those tantrums where your kid loses it and you're just like, I don't know what's going on here. And
yep.
I could not get her back, just back grounded. And these started to become more frequent. And so we went to the pediatrician and I was told, you know, kids get stomach aches and headaches. And I'm like, I think there's something more going on here. And this went on for a while. And we finally went to a naturopath. And truly within 48 hours when her blood work came back, we found out that she was celiac. And so, of course, she said take gluten out immediately. We went back to the pediatrician who told me that getting notes from or blood work from my naturopath was like getting notes from my spiritual healer. And that was
I must have felt good.
Last time we saw that pediatrician. And so to clarify, you know, conventional medicine has its place, and no way am I like dogging conventional medicine, but that was really the pivot for me that this is not where we need to be. And so that really opened our eyes to that whole world. Just kind of looking down the line, I had struggled a lot after my second pregnancy, actually with this child who's celiac, with my thyroid and hyperthyroid. Right. And they were diagnosing me as Graves. I was actually one of your clients at that time. I started losing a lot of weight. And at first we thought, this is great, until we realized it was actually my thyroid that was a lot of the issue there. And come to find out, I was celiac as well. I'll spare you all of those details. But not one time did the endocrinologist say to me, hey, did you know 10% of people that have hyperthyroid have gluten sensitivity or issues with celiac? Not once. And I even asked about diet multiple times. And so I had my own roundabout journey and found out that I was celiac, and then come to find out my oldest daughter was as well. So all the women in my family, luckily share that trait, but it's been a journey then of just what that looks like. And not only just taking gluten out of our diets is one thing, but what I wasn't educated on and is what caused the pivot in my own journey into integrative health is like what that's done to your gut and what else right. needs to be done from a healing perspective than just removing the trigger.
So what's the difference between celiac disease and gluten intolerance?
So celiac disease is an actual autoimmune condition. And so when someone eats gluten, the villi in the small intestine are actually damaged. So they're supposed to be, you know, they literally look like this, like little fingers. They should be kind of floating around in there. When they eat gluten, those get blunted. And then yes. because of that, we're unable to absorb nutrients. Someone that has a gluten sensitivity will experience similar symptoms as someone that has celiac, whether they're neurological or the digestive upset, but the villi themselves, while they may experience all the inflammation, aren't actually damaged.
Got it. Yeah, I remember years and years ago because, you know, I started studying functional medicine probably in like 2006 or 2007. And one of the first avenues that I went down was looking at gluten intolerance, subclinical gluten sensitivity. And that's where I think there's this massive misunderstanding around, right, the difference between what a lot of maybe conventional medicine doctors are looking at is they're just looking at full-blown celiac disease, like which you said is an autoimmune disorder where our body's literally attacking itself. Like you said, it's basically like taking a flamethrower to the insides of our intestines and burning off all of these microvilli versus this subclinical level of gluten sensitivity, which I believe that a lot of people have. And it's become much more acceptable, socially acceptable over the years here now, 8, 9 years later, where you used to be such an outlier trying to avoid gluten. I think now you can kind of almost find quote unquote gluten-free, you know, products anywhere, but kind of, I think what's confusing is people understanding how they would know if they have a gluten intolerance versus celiac disease. How are those diagnosed?
So as far as testing goes, you know, if you go just to your doc and you say, like, I think I have a gluten issue, they're going to run like transglutaminase antibodies. And those are looking for celiac is what those are looking for. And if those were positive, someone would go on then to the gastroenterologist and do a biopsy to determine if someone was celiac or not. That's not always necessary depending on the numbers, but usually that's the gold standard. So unfortunately, from a gluten sensitivities perspective, is typically going to be missed in the conventional model because it's just not tested for. If you're looking for like an IgG type of sensitivity.
Right.
So these are run typically, you know, there's different food sensitivity tests that are sometimes great, sometimes not, depending right. on what level of inflammation is going on in the gut. I commonly actually don't run these. And a lot of my patients who are clients who show up who are experiencing a lot of inflammation, because we'll find 25 foods lit up on there. And it's very overwhelming for someone. And then we get in the mindset, like, I can't eat anything, and which isn't necessarily the case. It's just that there's so much inflammation that shows up. So a wheat zoomer is really a test that I rely on and love, because not only does it test gluten sensitivity, but it also tests specifically to break down gluten even further into specific proteins, what someone reacts to, or even just wheat itself. Sometimes it's not gluten and it's actually wheat. And it will also show the neurochemical component, which I think is really important, especially for parents and kids to be able to identify. If someone reacts to certain areas of the protein, they'll actually have a stronger neurochemical reaction. And gluten in the brain binds it to an opioid receptor. So, you know, it sounds really dramatic, but like it's the same place that like cocaine and heroin are right. binding in the brain. So when we take gluten away initially for people who respond that way, there will actually be a withdrawal that occurs. And particularly in kids, you will see just this major depression, anxiety, sometimes those uncontrollable meltdowns that I'm mentioning happening, even in a severe gluten sensitivity, not necessarily celiac. So when we have like behavioral issues, ADD, major brain fog, although there's a host of reasons that that could be happening, gluten sensitivity must be ruled out.
Yeah, one of the things that I recall learning very early on and understanding is the role that, you know, gluten can play in just a myriad of physiological symptoms. Like you said, these neurochemical properties where it's stimulating the brain, it's affecting joint health, it's affecting gut health, and it's far beyond just someone, you know, your kid or you getting a stomach ache or feeling bloated. It's creating and impacting different inflammatory pathways depending on the person, and is very different for everyone. And so, you know, one of the things that I recall kind of understanding from you years ago, and then of course going down the road of working to try and identify what was going on with our kids, specifically our son and some of his behavioral issues, is doing some of this advanced testing and really seeing for him specifically that there was a lot of neuroinflammation going on from his diet, and a lot of he was having a strong reaction to the gluten that he was consuming, which I think it's easy to, listen, as a parent, it's like, there's only so many things that we can deal with at any given time. And so coming to the realization that you might need to make a significant dietary change, I think is a really, really challenging approach and understanding to this process when we're trying to improve our global, you know, health, our full family wellness. But seeing the, you know, the benefits, and this is something that I had experienced in myself years and years ago as part of my healing process, is needing to eliminate gluten because it's something that at the time I really didn't respond well to. And still don't to some degree, not nearly as bad as it was in years past. But now, of course, applying that to our children and seeing the different ways in which it impacts them. And so what I'm hearing from you is that it would be reasonable if, you know, for a lot of the parents listening, if our children are experiencing behavioral issues, attention issues, cognitive issues, digestive issues, bowel movement irregularity, skin issues, what else that would perhaps be an indicator that there could be some subclinical gluten intolerance, and or maybe worth looking at celiac disease.
Yeah. So joint pain is huge. And kids don't usually express, I have joint pain, right? They will say, it'll appear a lot like growing pains, which can be real tricky to figure out in that age, but they're just sore, their legs, their arms. A lot of times at night, it will show up. So that's something to consider. Headaches are huge. You know, children should not be getting headaches, especially severe headaches. So that's something to consider if it's happening on a regular basis. Mood swings. So if you're just kind of swinging from one end to the other without any other trigger or reason that you would see that would be happening, is something to consider. And really like attention and focus. So gluten sensitivity can present very much like ADHD. So a lot of those things, that similar track. So we always kind of start there. And there's one other thing that you were saying that I just want to note. If someone is considering getting tested for gluten sensitivity, the tricky part is you need to have gluten in your system in order for that test to be accurate. So if you decide, you know what, maybe it is gluten, or maybe we do have a sensitivity and we want to go ahead and remove that, you can absolutely, of course, do that. But if you want to show positive in the testing, it does need to be in your diet. And a lot of times that's hard because we'll take gluten out of the diet. And then they have these, you know, huge changes. And the last thing they want to do is add it back into their diet or their child's, either one, in order to do the testing, because they're almost fearful at that point of what symptoms might show up. So important to note that if you're considering getting tested, it's great to do right in the beginning, and then you can remove it.
What's your opinion of really the amount of people that have some level of gluten intolerance versus full-blown autoimmune celiac disease? Because I think, you know, maybe there's some statistic around the number, like there's just such a small percentage of people with celiac disease that are actually diagnosed.
Yep.
And so it makes me wonder, of course, you know, you and I having done this for a very long time too, and having a lot of anecdotal evidence around clients that we've worked with and people that we've seen really thrive once they eliminate it from their diet. I'm curious your personal opinion around, right, both of those things, like clinically diagnosable celiac versus clinical subclinical gluten intolerance.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the statistic is something like 1-2% of the population have actual celiac.
Yeah.
And half of those don't know that they have it, is a consideration. And then with that said, 1 in 10 people have some sort of gluten sensitivity, which is an insane number and an amount of people. And most who are have no idea. And so yeah. Especially if their symptoms are just anxiety and depression, like your thought process is not like, oh, maybe I have a gluten sensitivity. You know, I need to go get an SSRI or some type of mood booster. Maybe I need some B vitamins, and maybe you do. But a lot of, we're not good at educating along that track. You know, unfortunately, when someone shows up with a symptom that may not be specifically correlated to digestion.
You know, I mean, that's, I just think that's such an important point. It's like we're sitting here, we're talking about all of the ramifications of the inflammation that can be created from having gluten in your diet. And it's not that every single person should remove it, but it is, you know, creating the level of awareness to simply say, listen, if you are experiencing symptoms that ranges the gamut around, but everything from brain to mood to joint to gut, to skin, right? All of these things. So if you or your child is presenting with some of these maladies, like sure, go down the conventional medicine route if that's what you're comfortable with. But before hopping on an SSRI or a medication to quote unquote balance you out, let's consider for a moment that what we're putting in our system could absolutely be contributing to the severity of the symptoms that we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously being someone, and I want to hear about your guys' experience with making the transition to a, you know, a gluten-free household and how seemingly difficult that can be. But I think it's, you know, it's worth considering of course, one, that could be problematic for you, giving yourself the opportunity to get rid of it, which can be really hard to do now because it's in a lot of foods, food products, drinks, right, that we are exposed to on a daily basis, I think far more than people think.
Yeah, it's hiding everywhere. And for someone with a gluten sensitivity, you know, that obviously looks a lot different than it does for someone with celiac. You mentioned about like our journey and switch to the, you know, the gluten-free life as a celiac household.
Right.
And that's a really great topic that I don't think gets addressed very often, because not only is it just this huge learning curve of where is gluten and where is it hiding in honestly hundreds of places I would have never imagined, popsicles, drinks, medications, you know, there's things that I would just assume should be
right.
Lemonade, you know, should it be gluten-free? The learning curve in that and the grace that you have to give as a parent when you feel like you've poisoned your child because you're the one making the decisions, right? And buying the foods and maybe you didn't know. It's very emotional also, you know, this whole journey, and it takes time. And it's, so I always tell parents that this is a journey, and that's such like a buzzword. I hate to use it, but it is, and it's, you're going to mess up. And your kid might get a rash from it, but you know what? You're both going to learn that has that in it, and you'll never do it again. And you keep moving. So I think the hardest part was not only the learning curve of where is it hiding, but just the cross contamination situation, which means like if a pan has been used with gluten, you know, you can't use that pan to cook your celiac food. And so as a household for us, it was way easier to just transition off of gluten altogether. It was too much to try to figure out. And there are many people that do a split household, and that works for them, and that's fine. So whatever you need to do. But for us, it was just easier. And we decided as a whole that once we started to learn, as much as we did, that it wasn't necessary for any of us to be gluten, whether we were celiac or not. So we know we made that transition there. And, you know, and the boys in my family, like, they do still have a donut occasionally. They do still have pizza. You know, I think that's important too. Like, sometimes when you're talking to a celiac, someone always might think like, oh, well, they just think it's terrible for everyone. Like, I don't think it's great for anyone, but I also, you know, there's balance in life. And if you love pizza, it's okay to go have, if, you know, if it works for you, yeah, and your health, pizza now and then, that's actually better. And I would promote that than fearing it, because I think the fear that sometimes comes in is actually just as bad. It's causing as much damage long-term, and the stress, as the, for someone that's gluten sensitive, the food itself. And so there's a lot of kind of talking off that that ledge as well. And what that looks like, I think it can become like an identity, I think. And it's really important to move away from that.
Hey guys, I want to interrupt this conversation briefly with an exciting announcement. If you're a father and struggling to lose the pounds that have crept on over the years, I understand your challenge. You're juggling a successful career, a loving family, and now you're looking to regain that energy and physique that seems to have slipped away. And that's exactly why I created PrimeFit Operating System. PrimeFit OS is a unique hybrid coaching program designed specifically for men like you. Now, you guys know me, we're not about quick fixes or impossible routines. Instead, we focus on real sustainable change through personalized nutrition and science-driven strength training, all wrapped up in a supportive community with expert guidance directly from me and my 20 years of experience working with men just like you. Imagine mastering your nutrition without restrictive dieting, getting stronger and leaner, and boosting your overall energy, all without overwhelming your already busy schedule. With PrimeFit OS, you're getting more than just a cookie-cutter nutrition and fitness plan. You're embarking on a transformative journey that fits into your life, not the other way around. So, if you're ready to take the first step towards a healthier, leaner, stronger, more energetic, confident, ass-kicking you, join us over at PrimeFit Operating System. Trust me, guys, your family, your career, and most importantly, you will thank you for it. So if you guys are interested in getting started and want to find out more about the program, let's chat. Just head over to primefitos.com/call and grab a time on my calendar. Remember, it's your time to be at your prime.
Definitely. I appreciate that mindset around it too, because as with everything that we talk about on the show, it's like, it's really about finding the balance. Now, understandably, if you have an autoimmune disorder, like, you literally need to do everything you can to avoid it. And so you need to be aware and you need to do your due diligence. And you've got some great resources around, you know, where all of the places it is hiding and what have you. And so we'll put, you know, your contact info in the show notes so that people can reach out. And if they are, in fact, celiac or concerned about it, to dig into some of those nuances. I know, obviously, just having you guys as friends and enjoying dinners together and me preparing dinners and what have you, is that's really made me do my due diligence around, like, really looking deep into products and seasonings and stuff like that, of coming to the realization, like, wow, it's, you know, one of those where it doesn't overtly say it's not in it. So it makes you wonder if it is in it. And then you're like, I'm sure you've been down a million different rabbit holes to understand that. But, you know, weaving our way back a little bit around just gluten in general, what do you think it is about gluten in the general population that is problematic? And maybe it's just in the US versus other countries. You know, I can't tell you how many times we have clients who know very clearly that they have some level of gluten intolerance. They generally avoid it, but then they go to Europe or Italy or something like that, right? And they eat pasta and pizza and they feel amazing and there's no issues, and then they come back and all of a sudden they get barraged with symptoms, inflammation, bloating, brain fog, all of that type of stuff. So what's your observation there?
Yeah, I mean, we could go down this whole rabbit hole, but in one word, I'd say glyphosate.
Yeah.
So our crops are just sprayed you know, like crazy, much more than other countries. And so with someone with just a sensitivity, not celiac, when you're going to Europe and you're doing great and able to eat the pastas and the pizzas and you come back, and many people that think they have a gluten sensitivity, it's actually a glyphosate issue. The problem is you can't really separate the two in the United States. And so it makes a little bit more complicated. But really, that's the case. And they're actually starting to see in research, and this is becoming more and more, and I'll be honest with you, I will wonder if the research will even get halted or keep going, that one of the possible triggers for celiac is actually the levels of glyphosate in the system.
And so to be clear, the glyphosate is a chemical pesticide that's sprayed on our crops, right? So soy and wheat and whatever else that is potentially problematic. And we're consuming massive amounts of it. Just think about all the manufactured processed food products that we consume as Americans. So I think that just in general, it's that in and of itself is really problematic, is the access that we have to processed, manufactured, refined, shelf stable foods versus one of the differences that we see in Europe is, you know, it's people are getting fresh food from the market, you know, on a daily or every couple of days, they're getting a loaf of bread from the market that will be rock solid, you know, in 2 days. If they don't eat it quickly, the fruit will be, you know, rotten in a couple of days if they don't eat it, versus our quote unquote shelf stable foods, which, you know, you can leave on the counter for seemingly eons. It's because they're sprayed with tons of chemicals to be able to do that.
Right. And those build up in the body. So if you're not actively, you know, detoxing, or someone that's just in general by nature and genetics, like a poor detoxer, these levels build up in the system. And so when, you know, you've got like a cup and you're filling up with inflammation, when the cup fills up, the inflammation's spilling over, and that's when our symptoms are occurring. So even in Europe, it's not that those people aren't sensitive to glyphosate, but they're just not, their cup isn't getting as full, right? And it's not causing,
they're just not as exposed to as much garbage as we are. So speaking of detoxification, okay, now obviously one of the things that you do in your practice is, once we've identified that there's this, you know, that there's inflammation present, that there's intolerances present, that there's poor detoxification or gut health issues, or, you know, imbalances in brain and gut, right? So what are the typical steps, or like, what's the most common things that you would do with people to help them start to heal from the barrage of things that we're exposed to from a, you know, from a fundamental level?
Mm-hmm. So I actually just transitioned this recently, just based on working on with more and more clients. And I just couldn't get away from the fact that we can jump in right to like drainage and detox and go after all of that. But if we don't have the foundation of the basics in place, in 6 months, we are right back where we started. So we spend a good amount of time in, you know, when I say basic foundations, and I'm talking the things that most of us feel like are trivial. Are you drinking enough water? Is there protein in your diet? Are you getting sunlight? And I find that if people aren't taking action in what they know in that area, we're not going to take action in the bigger things down the line. And so I get a lot of like, can we just get to the chase? You know, I'm like, trust me, this is where we have to start, because we're not getting anywhere down the road if we don't have this foundation set. And so we work through, you know, a lot of the basics, and we pick some habits and on their lifestyle and scenario, what would be most helpful to them. And then within that, almost always with, I would say 90% of my clients, the liver is the area that is struggling the most. And because it is the, you know, the giant filtration system of the body, if you want to look at that, we're really, really concentrating on liver health, getting our bowels back going. Many people with gluten sensitivity, you know, we always think it's diarrhea. It's actually mostly constipation, believe it or not. And so we're getting our bowels back moving so we can clean toxins out as we start to go after then some maybe different pathogens or viruses or whatever that looks like, parasites down the road. But we really start working on the liver. I love castor oil packs, especially for kids. It's so easy. They can sleep in it. It's just very simple, you know, and there's some few basic supplements that can be really helpful, but really honing in there while we're doing testing to see exactly what's going on in that person's body. So I do typically run blood work. And then if necessary, we dive a little bit deeper into specific gut options. A lot of people with, you know, not just gluten, but a lot of food sensitivities, you know, you hear things like SIBO, like thrown around, but it's very common in this population. And so what bacteria are there? And then, you know, where are they hiding? Is mold involved? So a lot of times we get this backup in the system that occurs, but by getting this foundation set, a lot of those issues you'd be surprised get taken care of on their own. So a lot of times if we were to just jump into the deeper issue, we could have solved it actually with basic foundations. And that's what I'm finding more and more specifically with kids. Like they're very resilient, you know, their bodies are still resilient. So sometimes what we try to make a very complicated issue isn't, if we just go back to taking action in what we know. And as a mom, it's much easier for me to say, okay, I'm going to do these three things for the next 2 weeks consistently for myself or my child than to say, here's 25 things and I want you to do them all. And I'll be honest, when I started as a practitioner, I did that because I just wanted everyone to have all the information and do all the things. And it's just it's overwhelming. You know, we don't have time for that. And there's so much on social media. Do, you know, eat this, do that. And it's too much. So what are the things that we can take action in and be consistent in? And then once we have those down, we'll add in a couple more. And it's a much simpler process. And we actually get a lot more success that way.
And I obviously appreciate that very much, having been down this road and been in a position where I was so excited because of all the things that I knew that had helped me heal, right? You want to just share that with the world. And invariably, it's just information overload and far too challenging for people to implement, to say, listen, you're going to go 100% gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's just not going to happen. And so obviously we've adapted our ways, and I love that it's just kind of like finding a few of those foundational pillars that are realistic for you and your family to implement, because this, as cliche as it is, like this really is a journey. And it's like, we also want to infuse healthy behaviors with our kids and help them develop autonomy to be able to make informed decisions for themselves, instead of shoving this down their throat of saying, you can't do this, that, and the other, take all of these pills. Like, man, we're going to develop quite a lot of resistance to this quote unquote healthy mindset. So for parents that, and frankly, just individuals listening, right? So whether you're a parent, you're concerned about your kids, whether you don't have kids, but maybe this is enlightening you a little bit around, I've never really thought about gluten, or I've heard about it, but I didn't really know what it was and how it could potentially be, you know, negatively impacting my health. Like, what are kind of some of the overt things that we'll just use parents and their kids as an example, but that they should be looking at in their kids that might cause them to question whether the foods that they're feeding them are in fact problematic?
You meant constipation, you mentioned, and it can be diarrhea or flip-flopping between the two is also with food sensitivities will show up. And it's because the inflammation is building and waxing and waning based on the diet. Dark circles under the eyes, or those kind of bags where they just look like they didn't get enough sleep, is very, very common. Like you mentioned, different types of behavioral disorders, headaches we mentioned before, joint pain, skin rashes is another one. So eczema or psoriasis, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, that intense, like eczema or psoriasis, but they're just prone to rashes, itching, bumps on the, can be back anywhere, the back of the arms. A lot of times
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to tell you that. So as I alluded to, you know, we've been going down this road with Caleb, my son, who's 8, but our daughter Ava, who's 12, she always kind of had this distended lower belly. She was having a lot of skin bumps and kind of rashy type you know, bumps on the back of her arms, red bumps on the back of her arms. And when we started to exclude these gluten-containing grains, like just get them out of the cows and educate them on these things, she took it amongst herself to really exclude it, not just in the house, but out of the house as well. And very quickly, the skin improved. She dropped a bunch of weight. You know, the distended belly went away. She started feeling so much better. So I have to say, it was pretty remarkable to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned bloating, because that's huge. And I didn't mention it. And there's, I would beg to say, no one who has a gluten sensitivity who doesn't have a yeast candida issue. And when you're eating the gluten, you're feeding the yeast candida, right? And so we're getting this bloating, and a lot of times parasites as well. So, and to be honest, there's over 100 symptoms, which is what makes it so difficult to sometimes like identify diagnose. It's just such a broad scenario. But I would say if there's any of those occurring, it's worth exploring. And as a parent, it feels very overwhelming. Like, oh my goodness, the gluten's everywhere. What am I going to do when they go to school? And I always tell parents, like, start in the home.
Yeah.
You know, 80-20 rule. What you're cooking at home is gluten-free. When they're going to school, you know, you can start to deal with that, but start somewhere, you know? And knowing that, you know, sometimes the gluten-free options aren't always the healthier options as we from a ingredient perspective, but they're a great place to start. And then you can kind of back up from there. And, you know, of course we're working to as much of a non-processed diet as possible with balance. This is, you know, parenting in 2024, things
yes.
within reason, but just start somewhere. And it starts by us modeling at home, and, you know, we're buying the food, we're cooking the meals, they're watching what you're eating. So if you're going to sit and eat pizza next to a child and you're telling them, you know, to eat their steak and veggies, it's not going to go over well. And they're going to be resentful of it. And those are the kids that I find when they're out of the house are sneaking it everywhere, but they start to learn, they start to feel better. And I have lots of clients and my own kids, you know, who avoid things because they start to learn that it makes them feel terrible. Right. My older daughter just reacts neurologically, and she'll say, like, it makes me so sad. And that she gets depressed. I mean, truly, like, very depressed when she has gluten, and she's like, I don't want to feel sad. So they do start to learn, and that's really, you know, the model that you want them under and learning, but it's on us to role model that. So I think it's important. That's when I say that we have to take action as parents. Yeah. Help our kids. And that's kind of how that falls in line.
Yeah. I mean, I know same deal. It's like our objective with clients is to help them become their own best nutrition detective. And this is part of the process. It's just, you know, helping our kids and taking ownership over ourselves to understand what it is that we're putting in our body and if and how it's could potentially be negatively impacting us. And so, you know, there does require this level of awareness around these things and helping them develop the tools to be analytical about that stuff, because our modern day food system is not built to our advantage, like we've been talking about. And I'm not, you know, it's not to rag on everything that we're doing. It's just the nature of the beast here, because, you know, like you're seeing, Kelly, in your practice is it seems as though there's more and more kids with problems, right? With attention deficit problems and behavioral disorders and psychological disorders. And whether that's the case or not, I think we would both agree that a lot of it is coming from, obviously, our nutritional choices.
Absolutely.
And so obviously you provide a fantastic resource and business and coaching methodology to be able to help a family walk through these steps together, to be able to empower them to understand if the foods that they're consuming are a problem, how to identify the root cause, and what, you know, nutrition, supplemental, and lifestyle factors to address in order to help them heal. So, how can people find out more about you and potentially work with you?
Sure. Through my website. So, www.designfamilywellness.com, and also through social media, Instagram mostly. I'm on Design Family Wellness. So yeah, those are great ways to get a hold of me through both of those places. And I just really strive to help the overwhelmed parent with all the information, who knows there's issues, wants to make change. Usually it's someone who's dabbled with this supplement or that supplement, and they just can't figure it out and need the guidance, someone to walk them through what does this look like and how do I do this? So I'm here to help build like that foundation so that we can carry that through to the next generation, so that hopefully we're one step, you know, closer to that healthier lifestyle.
You know, we work with so many hard charging parents, and one of the biggest stressors that we deal with obviously is our kids and our kids' health and performance. And we want nothing but the best for our kids. And so if we can help put our kids in a position for success, and I think it's easy to just write off perhaps some of the things that our kids experience as kid things, whether it's attention issues, whether it's bowel movement or gut issues, is just kind of like the way that it is. And I don't think it has to be that way, to the degree that when we can help our children find answers to their problems, it invariably helps us find answers to helping us better manage our stress, helping create better relationships within our family, helping us all be more productive together. And so I know for us as a business, you've been a remarkable resource to be able to refer clients to help them with these very things, to help them and their kids work together to kind of embrace this root cause approach and help them improve in all areas. So we appreciate you for that. And for those of you listening, if you want to find out, you know, more about Kelly and her business, Design Family Wellness, all of the links are in the show notes, but reach out, have a conversation, find out more. We couldn't possibly recommend her services enough. So thanks for your time.
Thanks,
Kelly.
Ben,
I really appreciate it.
Thanks. I enjoyed being here.
Talk soon.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this content valuable, here are four ways I can help you in your nutrition journey for free. One, grab a free copy of my Fat Loss Fix Guide at fatlossfixguide.com. Two, join my free group at smartnutritionmadesimple.com. Three, subscribe to my YouTube channel at smartnutritionmadesimpletv.com. Four, leave a 5-star rating and positive review so that we can gain access to more nutrition experts ready to share their knowledge with you and ultimately help more people make smart nutrition simple.